2 days at World Agritech in San Francisco, and I heard a lot of interesting comments about generative AI.
There's traditionally been two interfaces for users to get into systems, through a desktop app or through a mobile app. I believe that generative AI is going to create a third channel into systems to get data, and that's through conversation.
It's just an easy way for them to engage in that technology, which might be more practical if you think about the rural environment in which we operate than somebody who's sitting behind a desk with a keyboard looking this information up.
This is going to really revolutionize how we collect data. It's going to revolutionize how we build data models. And it's also going to revolutionize how everybody in industry, but in particular farmers, can take advantage of analytics.
May I point out, you know, to get to that vision of LLMs and Gen AI and ag, guess what? You're gonna need to have interoperable data to begin with, right? So it's truly a garbage in, garbage out kind of thing. Your LLM model is only gonna be as good as the data that it's sitting on.
Generative AI, the unlock the ag tech industry has needed, or another big exciting promise with little to show for it. All on today's Future of Agriculture podcast. Hello, fellow Ag Nerd. My name is Tim Hamrich, and every week you and I get to hear from the founders, farmers, innovators, and investors shaping the future of the ag industry. Before we dive in today, I'd like to take just a moment to recognize our quarterly presenting sponsor, which this quarter is Headstorm, engineering growth for the farms of tomorrow. Headstorm is a full-service technology consultancy with been-there-done-that knowledge and expertise in the ag industry. The team at Headstorm knows which digital strategies work and which ones don't work based on the competitive landscape across broadacre, specialty, and animal industries. Realize your business objectives through innovative solutions and focused product strategy. Swiftly bring ideas to life from proof of concept to MVP with elite product strategy and engineering. Headstorm provides a holistic and actionable technology roadmap that bridges the gap between strategy and implementation. From inception to execution, Headstorm helps you to play to your strengths, mitigate your weaknesses, and make technology your unfair advantage. Learn more at headstorm.com. That's headstorm.com. I'll leave a link in the show notes. And thank you very much to Headstorm for supporting Ag Innovation and the Future of Agriculture podcast. All right, a couple weeks ago, I had the chance to attend World Agritech in San Francisco, and I spent the vast majority of my time there in back-to-back one-on-one conversations, some of them recorded, some of them not, all about the future of agriculture, of course, what I tend to talk about all the time. It was really an embarrassment of riches, as they say, to have so many interesting people in one place who all work and are thinking about ag tech and agribusiness. Rethink Events was kind enough to provide me with a media pass for the event. Thank you to them. And our quarterly presenting sponsor this quarter, Headstorm, helped to coordinate some key interviews that will be a part of both today's episode as well as a few other episodes you'll hear throughout this quarter. Take note that a lot of the recordings you're going to hear from today happened at that live event with thousands of other people, so there's going to be some occasional background noise, but overall, I was pretty pleased with the quality of audio I was able to get considering the circumstances. There's a temptation, though, at World Agritech and events like this to ask what's new and what's next. You know, we're all getting together to kind of find out something new. And when I come back, people want to know my takeaways. They want to know what new things are being talked about. And that sort of begs the question, you know, does there always have to be something new, right? Can we have quite a bit that's happened in the last decade? There's still a lot to work on, still a lot of things to work through. So we don't necessarily always have to have a new, shiny, next new thing. And I actually encountered a lot of what I would consider a healthy mix of people talking about new ideas and people talking about, you know, ideas that have been around a long time, just that just still need a lot of work to really have an impact. This would include a lot of topics that won't shock you if you've been listening to the show for any period of time, like data, automation, biologicals, regenerative ag, climate change, venture capital, etc. But there was one topic that was new, or at least new-ish, and that was the talk of the potential for generative AI to produce positive change in ag tech. It's clear several companies have been working on this, or at least thinking a lot about it and investing some resources into it. And if you want a quick and way oversimplified explanation of what I mean by generative AI, think of it as a tool that uses models and raw data to create content in the way of text, like ChatGPT, if you've ever been on that platform, or images like Midjourney, which is another tool that uses generative AI for images, or audio, like you heard last year in episode 361 when I used Descript to generate the intro to the episode in my voice from just text that was entered from FBN's Norm platform. Here's a refresher of what that sounded like. Welcome to the Future of Agriculture podcast, where we explore the people, companies, and ideas shaping the future of the agriculture industry. I'm your host, Tim Hamrich, and today we'll be diving into the world of artificial intelligence and agriculture. Still a little bit spooky to hear my voice, AI generated, but all of those are examples of generative AI using mostly more mainstream applications, but the key here is all they require is a prompt by me typing or speaking what I want the tool to make for me. Or in the case of that intro, just copy and pasting the text that Norm generated, and then Descript did the rest in my voice. Wild. This is what makes it all generative. The tool is making the content, not me. But what does this really mean for the future of agriculture? Are these just fun and interesting tools to play with, or do they really represent a massive step forward in technological capabilities? That was sort of the tone of a lot of the Gen AI conversations I was a part of. One of the more intriguing panels at World Agritech, at least in my opinion, was titled The Gen AI Era. So I sort of stole that title for the title of this episode, as you may have noticed, Navigating Opportunities and Challenges in Ag Tech. It actually included three former guests of this podcast, Ranveer Chandra from Microsoft. He was on episode 266, Dr. Jeremy Williams at Bayer Crop Science, who was from episode 111, and Elliot Grant at Mineral, who was on 345. Also sitting on the panel was Elizabeth Festigi at Amazon Web Services and Faraz Sheikh at Syngenta. If I had to sort of summarize that panel, every member was, of course, eager to say that generative AI represents a dramatic shift in capabilities for us to make data more valuable, or to use a cliche term, to turn data into insights. But what exactly are we talking about here? What is generative AI, and what is so dramatically different about it? Is this just filling the need to have a next new big thing that will potentially fizzle out and not live up to the excitement like ag tech has developed a reputation for in the past? Those are questions I wanted to ask at World Agritech and seek to answer here for you today in this episode. But first, we need to draw a distinction here about what generative AI is and what it's not. We've been talking about artificial intelligence for a long time. On the show, in fact, Jeremy Williams, who was one of those panelists I just mentioned, was on this show back in 2018, 6 years ago. In fact, I went back to listen to it in preparation for this episode. This episode 111, and he gives both a good general definition of what AI is and some context that I actually think is really important for today's episode on the power of AI when working in collaboration with, not instead of, a human user.
So artificial intelligence, or AI, as I'll probably use the shorthand more frequently, is sort of the umbrella term to describe the use of computer technologies to perform things that we normally think of as being associated with human intelligence. For example, facial recognition, or the ability to translate one language into another. So that umbrella term, using computers to perform tasks where they look at lots of data, they determine insights, and then they can predict things, is what is referred to as artificial intelligence. Within the sort of umbrella term, you've got lots of different things you'll hear, like machine learning, deep learning, et cetera. These are all specific examples of different computer techniques that are used to essentially turn data into insights. What is less recognized that I think is intriguing is the ability now to pair human intelligence with artificial intelligence. And so there have been some very interesting games done where you have, for example, a human chess player paired with an artificial intelligence chess playing game. And what they find is that the combination of the human and the artificial intelligence game is actually superior to either the human or the game by itself. And this is, I think, something that we don't pay enough attention to. Artificial intelligence, I believe, will enhance human intelligence and will allow us to focus more on the creative aspects of human intelligence and rely on the machines to do more of the rote work. I think that ultimately will be better for us as humans. And so that, I think that's a really cool example that unfortunately doesn't seem to be as well known. The fact that when you put the human with the machine or the human with the computer algorithm, you can actually get a system that's better than either by itself.
Well, AI has advanced significantly since that 2018 interview. So has my audio quality, apparently. The big change, though, with generative AI is that it makes it easier for that human AI interaction to happen. And it makes it so anyone who can talk or type can work in lockstep with these AI tools to get the outcomes you want from the data that the tool is accessing. Headstorm founder and CEO Lawrence King sat down with me in San Francisco as well, and he describes generative AI as a whole new interface, one that is likely well-suited for agriculture.
Artificial intelligence is a pretty broad term. And so you think about that could be broken down into, you know, machine learning, deep learning, expert systems, natural language processing. And so the ag space has been doing that for a long time. And, you know, all the machine learning models to do yield predictions and all the forecasting, the imagery, that's been in agriculture for a while. I think that what's new to agriculture is more of the generative AI. So think of the LLMs and the conversational pieces to it. Our point of view is that right now there's traditionally been two interfaces for users to get into systems, through a desktop app or through a mobile app. I believe that generative AI is going to create a third channel into systems to get data, and that's through conversation and chat interfaces. And that's really where AgPilot, where we focused with AgPilot is if you think about kind of the traditional way is click and drill down. If I need to get to a customer's data or I need to get to their agronomic field info or whatever that might be, I have to go to my customer. I have to start clicking down, down and down. If you start thinking about the number of clicks, the amount of time it takes you to get to a piece of data that you're interested, that starts adding up over time. The chat interface allows you to simply ask the question and get the answer without any of the drill down. And so I see that becoming a third interface.
AgPilot, that you just heard Lawrence mention there, is a new generative AI agronomic assistant built by Headstorm. The app utilizes generative AI to transform all the various raw forms of data into plain language and actionable insights in real time. Headstorm says this will give agronomists an unfair advantage, leveraging data from both public sources and proprietary data from the ag retailers. This is a great example to use and provides some context for a couple of the buzzwords you might hear in reference to generative AI, one of which being LLMs, which stands for large language models, which recognize and generate text. Another term you're going to hear is transformer. No, not Optimus Prime, but a type of neural network that's able to take in data and information in one format and then transform or change it into another because the models have learned the context or the relationships between the components. This is what enables Gen AI tools to better bridge the digital and the physical worlds because the models are able to contextualize the data and produce it in a format that users actually want. In the case of AgPilot, that's agronomists or retailers or other trusted advisors, which happens to be where a lot of companies seem to see the initial opportunity for this technology to help make those that serve farmers more effective and more efficient, focusing on the agronomist or the trusted advisor. Someone who thinks about this opportunity a whole lot is Amy Tasing, President of Ag Solutions and Chief Technology Officer at Wilbur Ellis, which, as most of you probably know, is a leading international marketer and distributor of agricultural products around the globe. It was her explanation of what this could open up for their agronomists that really opened my eyes to the potential applications of generative AI.
We have, as part of our digital portfolio, and have had, an internal proprietary system called AgVerdict that helps us manage all of our agronomic information, supports our agronomists tracks recommendations, provides application information and compliance, does all these things and has done for a while. And so that background or that foundation platform has allowed us to do some things on top of it, right? So Crop Sites, for example, is a product we brought out about a year and a half ago that's grower facing as a way to help growers visualize what's happening, bringing in multiple sources of data and putting it together in a way where they can actually have insights, make decisions, get value by making real-time decisions in season. And that in and of itself is fantastic. However, on top of that, we have 500 agronomists that are walking the fields every day. Yes, they're leveraging Ag Verdict, but they don't always have time to sort of stop and type things in. And, you know, they're calling somebody who's typing things in. And as we're thinking about how to help them be more effective and work with our growers, something like Ag Pilot, where they can use that interface, you know, native language interface, to be able to get the information they need around the grower and the history and what, you know, what might be happening in a county and how that applies to that particular grower. It's just an easy way for them to engage in that technology, which might be more practical if you think about the rural environment which we operate than somebody who's sitting behind a desk with a keyboard looking this information up.
So AgPilot is just one example of creating this new interface that Lawrence referenced, in this case for agronomists or other frontline advisors. But the applications for this technology run even deeper. Rishi Pete, who's been a guest host on this podcast a number of times, he also writes the Software is Feeding the World newsletter, released a report last month in partnership with Sarah Nolet and Matthew Pryor at Tenacious Ventures titled "Yield Maps Killed Ag Tech Software. Can AI Fix It?" In it, they include several case studies of AI in action, including some generative AI solutions. One that I wasn't familiar with is Digital Green, a nonprofit that works with farmers in Asia and Africa. According to their report, Digital Green launched an AI assistant called Farmer.chat that uses ChatGPT and WhatsApp to get farmers access to vetted agronomic information. This provides local advice targeted towards farmers and extension agents, so they can have real-time communication between governments and farmers. They've rolled this out to a mind-blowing 400,000 extension agents in India. I just can't even picture that, but that is fantastic. And also on that panel at World AgriTech, Faraz Sheikh talked about what he sees as enormous potential for smallholder farmers when it comes to generative AI. And he also thinks it will turbocharge innovation and R&D efforts at Syngenta. When asked about the most game-changing difference generative AI will make, most of the panelists seem to see the opportunity happening in genetics and breeding. Just imagine through gene editing and generative AI getting to easily communicate the type of traits you want via text or talk. I know it's kind of science fiction-y, but I'm actually going to do another episode similar to this one about some of the biological innovations I dove into at World AgriTech, so stay tuned for that later. But the bottom line here is it isn't just going to be very large corporations or just ag retailers that are going to benefit from generative AI. As Jim Ethington, CEO of the company Arable, told me, it's likely to infuse a lot of the current ag data offerings.
And then AI, which I think is a bit of a buzzword and sort of a catch-all. But I do, when I think about it, you know, I think about how we can take all of this data that's out there that, as we talked about, is somewhat challenged at times. But with what's happening so rapidly in the language model front, but it's not just language models and chatbots. Following what's happening with images, what's happening with voice, what's happening with generative models, and what that can do for weather forecasts. Like, I think there's going to be so many opportunities in agriculture to apply those technologies, and not in some sort of vague buzzword way, but in ways that deliver real value. We do a lot with images because we produce them all the time. And what we can now do without having to go spend 2 years generating training data, but to just actually feed images into a model and get segmentation back or get identification back, you know, it's light years ahead of where it was a couple of years ago. And I don't think it's slowing down. I think more so than a monolithic AI that everybody can sort of point to, I think we're going to see it infuse all of these different use cases you know, from forecasting and prediction to image recognition, to definitely the language models and the sort of the language-based, like almost chat experience as well, where I think there's a huge opportunity to augment agronomists around the world with that technology, if they are provided with and trained on the right data. And I think that's something that we're not quite there yet on.
And that's, of course, a big caveat there at the end. One thing that came up in several of my conversations about generative AI is it doesn't solve some of the age-old fundamental data problems we've had for a long time in agriculture. In fact, those farm data issues that we've been talking about forever will still need to be resolved to fully realize the capabilities of digital agriculture, including generative AI. Claudia Ressler, Director of Agriculture Strategic Partnerships at Microsoft, did an excellent job in my conversation with her of outlining both the promise of generative AI and also some of the challenges that are likely still ahead.
I want to separate it in two things, like maybe a little bit the downside first and then talk about the upside. But what we find is that still a lot of solutions are built in silos. So data sits within one organization. It's not available for AI, and AI really feeds off large amounts of data. And that is an issue because a lot of the solutions today in the market look into what's happening now or what's happening in the near future. You're not taking full advantage of predictions and being able to build contextual data sets and understanding patterns in data. So predictions are difficult. And then sort of we think the full maturity is to be able to predict something to happen, act on it, and then sort of also trace whatever I predicted right. And can I sort of create a digital feedback loop that's a constant learning system? And we're quite a bit away from really building out those, you know, digital feedback loops and taking full advantage of AI. So that's the maybe not so nice negative side. But we also talked about generative AI and what's coming with really this opportunity to now create content, like start things from a draft, have like someone sitting next to you that's helping you with building out your products, your ideas and everything. So my prediction in this case is that this is going to really revolutionize how we collect data. So being able, for example, to analyze a video and, you know, create a text script out of it or collect spoken language input. It's going to revolutionize how we build data models in terms of simulation and you know, using synthetic data to train models. And it's also going to revolutionize how everybody in industry, but in particular farmers, can take advantage of analytics. So it's much more natural. It's much more humanized interfaces. Farmers can interact with language, with speech, and we can translate in different languages. So there's a whole new way of bringing analytics to everybody in the industry.
Well, Microsoft has certainly been one of the companies leading the charge here when it comes to generative AI. And that was evident, I thought, at World AgriTech, not only in my interview with Claudia and Ranveer leading that panel I mentioned earlier, but also in how they're building out this as your data manager for agriculture and partnering with companies like Headstorm and like Bayer Crop Sciences to uniquely address the needs of farmers and agronomists. Now, during the week of the event, Bayer announced their own pilot that has been using proprietary agronomic data to train a large language model with years of internal data, insights from thousands of trials in its vast testing network, and centuries of aggregated experience from Bayer agronomists around the world. The result, according to the company, is an expert system that quickly and accurately answers questions related to agronomy, farm management, and Bayer agricultural products. This continues to be a partnership between Bayer and Microsoft that's building on their recent history with their ag-powered services, which are a set of solutions that ingest data from Azure Data Manager for Agriculture. There really was, though, an overall environment of collaboration that I certainly felt in many of my conversations in San Francisco. And I think it represents a real evolution in the ag tech industry. Claudia obviously noticed it too. Here's what she wrote yesterday, actually, on LinkedIn about her experience at World AgriTech. I thought it was very fitting and reflective of my own experiences, so I thought I'd just read it to you. She said, "What struck me the most was the shift in mindset that I witnessed among the attendees. There was less talk about the future and more focus on the present. Less hesitation and more eagerness. Less competition and more collaboration. I think we're entering a new era of value networks. Co-innovation and co-creation in the agritech space, and I'm excited to be a part of it." I thought that was well put there by Claudia. Now, I realize a lot of this today sounds pretty high level and maybe a bit abstract, but I do think this collaboration piece and this focus on creating real solutions today is real, and it's progress, because as exciting as all of this generative AI stuff is, it still gets us back to some of these old issues, right? With ag data, as I mentioned earlier, you heard Claudia and Jim and others allude to it. And Mark Pendergrast, Director of Business Development for the Data and Cloud team at Bayer Crop Science, puts it very succinctly.
A couple themes that have resonated in meetings and in sessions that I've attended. One, of course, is the broad acknowledgement that data interoperability is indeed a key challenge and a tough nut to crack. We know that. we're not bashful or afraid of tackling that touchy subject and you know, tough technical challenge. So broad recognition by all the players in the market. The thing that I think is probably the newest revelation coming out of this show is the huge opportunity for large language models and generative AI. You know, we've seen, you know, lots of interest in these types of technologies in the broader tech space over the last 6 months. This is the first time I've seen that enthusiasm translate to ag. And, you know, we've seen all the headlines dominate with examples of copilots and Gen AI tools that ultimately we hope will provide tons of value for the farmer. That is, I think, going to be a good theme to really track and help spur for, you know, productization. And Bayer and Microsoft are not alone in this. We recognize that, you know, we are certainly talking about it, but we're not alone. You know, it's going to take a village to really crack that nut. But the opportunity for the value for a farmer and for companies, right? Let's be clear. It's not just farmers that will benefit from more intuitive user interfaces to data sets. Agronomists will benefit. You know, downstream companies, like I mentioned earlier, banks, insurance providers for ag, even consumer packaged goods companies that, you know, supply chain analysts that sit inside a factory floor, for example, they all have a common need for high quality, highly reliable agronomic based data and insights. And having the interaction to that data via a voice command or via a simple text tool, that's revolutionary. You know, it's no longer just a big web dashboard. It's no longer, you know, a Power BI visual that you know, that just overwhelms you when you open up a page. You now have, you know, a truly simplified user experience that pulls all that data together in a really easy to manipulate and interact with way. And may I point out, you know, to get to that vision of LLMs and Gen AI and ag, guess what? You're going to need to have interoperable data to begin with. Right. So if you don't do that foundational work, all that promise of LLMs goes to waste. Right. So it's truly a garbage in, garbage out kind of thing. Your LLM model is only going to be as good as the data that it's sitting on and that it's been trained on.
And there it is again, what I'll refer to as the ag data paradox, right? Which is we're all kind of tired of talking about or hearing about things like data interoperability, data quality, data standards, data privacy, but until we can get those issues resolved, it'll be a whole lot harder to reap the benefits, to realize the benefits of digital agriculture, including generative AI. Along a similar vein, one storyline I'm finding very interesting about generative AI are that there are real risks here. I'm not talking about like existential dread of like, you know, self becoming self-aware or anything like that, but risks of getting this wrong. Anyone who has used these types of tools for very long will encounter errors, what they call hallucinations in the results, sometimes biases, and powerful tools like this are also vulnerable to misuses. So companies that are built on farmer trust, which is pretty much every ag company I can think of, need to be really, really careful about how and when they roll these tools out. Here's Sachi Desai, who within the Bayer Crop Science Strategy team leads global strategic digital partnerships.
So we worked on a generative AI activity over the last 10 months or so. And I think we've talked about it here a little bit. We announced some piece of it, which is really to help alleviate and improve our frontline facing folks that deal with farmer customers, to provide them tools to have more confidence and enable not just better customer experience, but also it helped improve trust with the farmer. And the thing that was done there was like, we're going to pull in additional proprietary data. We're going to have experts to review the answers and iterate on it and turn it into a capability, right? So the idea was you start with a base large language model like ChatGPT, you know, whatever iteration, 3.5, 4.0, 4.5. And on top of that, you add this other data layer. You introduce it in, you let it train and learn that. So it's now a little bit more refined. Then you actually put it in the hands of like experts to say, is these good answers, not good answers, what's wrong? And start to give that feedback to refine it. And you start to then make it available to folks that can answer these questions on their own, but now they can have maybe some speed improvements. They can have some ways to alleviate their time there, to serve time somewhere else that's more valuable, right? Closer to the source of value or benefit for the customer. And the question is like, well, how do you take that and use it for something else, right? Or a different kind of crop or a different product or so forth. It's like, well, there'll be some benefit, right? It's additionally smarter than it's been previously, but it's, you still need new data that you have specific to you to become valuable. Okay, well, we have this data. Well, that's good. And you can give it unannotated data and hopefully figure something out, but then it's as good as the answers you put in there, right? And so you need to have some level of data annotation and cleaning and stuff. And that comes back to the same challenge, but now at least you know what you're working towards, hopefully. And so then you can make a better plan around, okay, I need to take this much amount of data, annotate it, go through by hand, validate it, feed into a system that'll give me some level of accuracy that I can feel confident in. That said, all these things always boil down to trust and confidence and liability and those like ugly legal things, but they're important. And if any of those fail even once, you can erode trust, and then you're basically just climbing a hill that's really steep all the time. And I think trust is paramount. I think most people are approaching it that way. Gen AI, like I was just talking to somebody else about Google recently, right? So Google's blasted for not releasing their internal Gen AI tools earlier, right, than like ChatGPT. And so it's like, oh, you guys did this. Why didn't you release it sooner, right? And they said, okay. Recently, they released a tool, but it had some flaws in it, right? But it could be acceptable. Now people are like blasting for having flaws and not doing their refinements. Like, well, it's like damned if you do or damned if you don't. And it's like ChatGPT got some benefit of, I think, excitement, and that alleviated the maybe unbaked nature of it. But a company that's big like Google and a company like my company, Bayer, you can't take that kind of risk. You have to be really deliberate and thoughtful of how you approach it.
It's clear that trust is going to be a huge issue here, not just with the accuracy of the tools, but also with the intent. I just can't help but wonder if some farmers and agronomists are going to have trouble trusting Gen AI models created and or distributed by the companies that they buy from or that they sell to. Or if what will be needed will be more of an independent third-party offering, like the approach Headstorm seems to be taking with AgPilot and others similar like them. Or perhaps an entire sort of independent layer that companies can participate in. Not something like that doesn't exist today, to my knowledge, but I definitely think there's going to have to be some steps taken to build trust in the intent behind the tools as well. I am convinced, though, that the rise of this generative AI will represent a new way to interact with data and increase the likelihood that we can identify the data that matters most in food and agriculture and tap into it at a time and in a way that we can actually use it to create real value for customers. I hate the amount of sort of generalities that we've had to use in today's episode, but keep in mind, this is new, this is nascent, and the pace at which it is developing is so rapid, it's hard to tell what next month might bring, nonetheless next year or in the next decade. But we're doing our best here to try to address that. Some of the big questions I have, though, going forward is who will win? In other words, where will the value be extracted through this technology, and where will it be captured? Because as much as we always like to think it's just shared, it doesn't seem to be the way things often play out. So those are real questions that I'll probably be asking to various guests in the coming months and years on this show, God willing that I can continue doing this. But there's no doubt that we will see advancements in this area, and they're happening extremely fast. It's both a little bit scary and extremely exciting. Here's Claudia at Microsoft one more time.
I don't think people can imagine what generative AI is bringing to their organizations, right? I mean, right now, and we're super happy, like the work that Headstorm did, but we also announced like one of our customers, ITC in India, they launched their co-pilot that's advising farmers on crop diseases, and they do it in 7 or 8 languages, and they take voice in. Like, there's a lot of excitement about this part, but companies don't understand that generative AI is likely going to change the complete processes and impact every single organization. So I'd love to, when we come back next year, be able to show how this impacts the sales teams, the marketing teams, sort of the operations, and truly what I said earlier about there is specifically to ACT this opportunity for better taking some of the manual data collection and data cleaning that's out there in the market and really get it, you know, fueled by generative AI, make it easier to bring data in, make it accessible for analytics, and then sort of build more of those intuitive experiences. And, you know, people on SME, we use generative AI today. I brainstorm with, you know, co-pilot in whiteboard and about ideas, like, you know, what are we going to do next? Or so just getting this more in your day-to-day life. And I think we'll see some exciting work next year.
Well, if you haven't yet used ChatGPT or Gemini or Grok or any of those generative AI tools, I highly encourage you just to hop on and start interacting with them. I mean, you could just use them for things that you might, you know, typically used for a Google search in the past, but then start making sure you do follow-up questions to see the various ways the platforms can present the information or repackage the information. It's mind-blowing at first, I think. It's a huge revelation. In fact, I just did this for my dad when I was home because he thought the whole thing was BS, and I said, okay, well, here, let's go through this. And even I think he was a believer by the end at the power of this type of interface. But as you learn to prompt it in different ways, you start to really see that there's a skill here in maximizing the output through how you prompt it and how you interact with it. And really, I think that can only be developed through repeated use. One more resource I'll point you towards. I encourage you to follow another former podcast guest on this show, Bailey Stockdale at Leaf. He has personally been testing and benchmarking several of the agronomy-focused LLMs and sharing the results online. Find him on LinkedIn and Twitter, and you can follow along with that. Super excited for the quarter ahead. I already have most of my content recorded, thanks to seeing so many great people at World Agritech. Thanks to Headstorm for being the quarterly presenting sponsor this quarter. Go learn more about them at headstorm.com. And last but never least, thank you for your time and your attention. I do not take it lightly. I'll be back next week with another story of ag innovation.